start this morning, because I know it's kind of early and it's hard to get into listening to talks. We're going to start with a little bit of audience participation, and we're going to start with a survey. It's just three questions, and you don't have to stand up. You just have to raise your hand, so it won't be very painful. The first question is, just to get some idea of your perceptions about vaccination coverage and how we measure vaccination coverage. And the first question is, what recommendations are made by the ACIP about routine early childhood vaccinations? Do they make recommendations about the vaccines and the number of doses? About the ages of those doses? Maybe about the minimum ages and intervals that are considered valid? Are there other vaccine-specific recommendations? Or is it all of the above? Okay, let's get a show of hands. How many say A, B, C, D, and how many say E? Okay, most people say E. So that's good. You understand how the recommendations are done. The second question is, what do you personally think of? What do you think it means for a two-year-old child to be up to date on their vaccinations? Does it mean that they've received all of the recommended doses of each vaccine? Does it mean that they've received the recommended doses after excluding the doses that are considered invalid by the ACIP? Or does it mean that they're not currently behind in any of their vaccinations after taking into account all of the ACIP recommendations? So who would say A? Who would say B? And who would say C? Okay, so most people feel that being up to date means that a child doesn't need any additional doses at this moment. And what do you think of when you hear the term vaccination coverage for any vaccination series? Do you think of the percent of children who received the number of doses that were recommended? Or the percentage of children who received those doses after excluding invalid doses? Or do you think of the percentage of children who are currently not behind in their vaccinations after accounting for all of the ACIP recommendations? So A, B, C? Okay. None of those are wrong answers. We kind of look at coverage in a lot of different ways, and so it's a matter of understanding what we're talking about when we talk about up-to-date and vaccination coverage. Vaccination coverage is coverage estimates are widely used to make programmatic and policy decisions. At least we'd like to think they're widely used for those decisions. They're used to evaluate the quality of services and also to target additional services to the groups of people who have low vaccination coverage. The federally reported vaccination coverage estimates that are published annually by the CDC and the MMWR report the compliance in the number of vaccines that are given, and the other recommendations are not routinely evaluated. Most of you are probably familiar with the vaccination schedule in the U.S. Actually, the left two-thirds of this is the early childhood vaccination schedule. And that shows the number of doses of each of the vaccine that are due, as well as the times that they're recommended. But I don't know how many of you have also read all of the caveats that go along with those recommendations. And in addition, there's a table that shows the minimum acceptable ages and intervals. And those were set to make sure that the vaccines aren't given too early or too close together to be effective. So this analysis looks at compliance with all of the ACIP recommendations. And the purpose is to pinpoint the strengths and weaknesses of vaccination programs and to help identify strategies to improve services. Specifically, we look at missing doses or dose counting coverage, which is the standard reported coverage. But also we look at invalid doses and we take into account other vaccine-specific recommendations. We used data from the 2005 National Immunization Survey, which had over 17,000 children aged 19 to 35 months completing a household interview and having vaccination history information from their vaccine providers. We analyzed the data in Sudan using a weighted analysis to account for the sampling. The primary outcome variable the outcome variables that we looked at were coverage with individual vaccines, that is DTP, polio, fully covered for polio, MMR, Hib, hepatitis B, and varicella, as well as the what's called the 43133 series, which is now getting longer and longer. Now it's 4313314 if you include pneumococcal and varicella, but that series is just all of those vaccines with the exception of varicella. Pneumococcal conjugate vaccine was excluded from this analysis because of the shortages and recent introduction of the vaccine that affected the children during the time that this, you know, that these children would have been receiving their vaccinations. So, and we looked at the vaccines that were received by the time of the interview at 19 to 35 months, which is the standard way to look at the National Immunization Survey data. The primary outcome variable was ACIP compliant coverage, which just meant that the child didn't need any additional vaccines at the time of the interview. So we didn't look at whether they got their vaccines on time. We only looked at whether they were up to date, whether they needed another visit to their provider at the time that they were interviewed at 19 to 35 months. It excludes all invalid doses with a 4-day grace period that's allowed by the ACIP. Those are those doses can be invalid because they are before the minimum age or before the minimum interval between doses. And also there's a minimum interval between two live vaccines if those vaccines aren't given on the same day. And in our current schedule, that only applies to MMR and varicella. Also, with the addition of Pediarix, children can get, you know, children can get a birth dose of hepatitis B and then get a dose of Pediarix at 2 and 4 months. And with the standard counting measure, that would be 3 doses, and that would be all the hepatitis B that they need. But as you probably know, the third dose, the last dose of hepatitis B, has to be given after 6 months to be considered valid. So that wouldn't be considered valid according to the ACIP recommendations. So we required that the last hep B be given after 6 months. For Hib, there's a couple of different formulations of Hib, and some of those require 3 doses and some require 4. The NIS does not collect information on the vaccine manufacturer that the children received. So in order to account for that, we required that the last dose be after 12 months, which is the recommendation for either of the formulations. Also, if a child receives HIV, their first HIV vaccine after 6 months, they need fewer doses to be considered up to date. In fact, after a certain point, they don't need any HIV doses. So we took that into account as well. And finally, we allowed children to be considered up to date for varicella if they either got the vaccine or they had a history of disease, as is recommended by the ACIP. So we also looked at standard dose counting coverage. And that's the method that's used and reported in the MMWR annually. That looks only at the number of doses, regardless of the age at receipt, with the exception of varicella, which has to be given after 12 months to be counted as up to date with the current methodology. And that methodology requires 3 doses of HIB. Okay, so some of the results. So this is the percentage of children who are up to date, who are covered ACIP compliant, basically, with each of the different vaccines and with the 43133 series. And if you compare that to the percentage of children who are compliant with the number of doses, who would be considered up to date with the standard methodology, you can see that for the most part, for the individual vaccines, the percentage of children up to date are slightly lower. With HIB and hepatitis B, there's a little bit more of a discrepancy. With varicella, slightly more children are considered compliant than with the standard method because of allowing for history of disease. And but for the series, there's more of a difference. And about 72% of children are ACIP compliant in their vaccinations, while 81% have received all of the doses in that series. And if you flip that around the other way and you look at the percentage of children who need to return to their vaccination provider, who need another visit to their provider, children who are not up to date, by the standard dose counting measure, that gives you 19%, or about 1 in 5 children. But if you then take into account all of the other recommendations, that goes up to 28%, or more than 1 in 4 children who are not up to date on their vaccinations when they were called at 19 to 35 months. So we can look at the effect of each of the recommendations, and we'll do this rather quickly. For DTP, about 14% of children were missing a dose, while about 2.5% received an invalid dose, reducing vaccination coverage overall about 1.5%. The reduction for polio was negligible, as was the reduction for MMR, was less than 1%. For HIV, again, few children received an invalid dose, reducing coverage not very much, but about 6.5% of children received 3 doses of HIV but needed 4, so didn't have a dose after 12 months. And that reduced coverage about 6.5%. In addition, a lot of children had their first dose of HIV after 6 months, and so they needed fewer doses. And that actually increased coverage by about 2%. For hepatitis B, almost 4% of children received an invalid dose, and that reduced coverage about 3.5%. And actually, I wanted to give you some other numbers on that. Just 1 second. Yeah, so for Hep B, actually about 14% of children had that third dose prior to the minimum age, probably mostly because of Pediarix. 11% of those went on, 11% total, you know, 11 percentage points, went on to receive a fourth dose, as they should, and 3% didn't, and would be counted as up to date with the standard dose counting measure and is not really appropriate as far as the ACIP recommendations. With varicella, about 1.5% received an invalid dose, decreasing vaccination coverage slightly. But in addition, about 3% of children had history of varicella disease, increasing coverage about 1%. And for the 43133 series, about 8% had invalid doses, and that reduced coverage about 6.5%. Or 6%. So, you know, that's all well and good. That's what's happening at the national level. But you might be asking yourself, how is that affecting the children in my state? Especially since there's a lot of state vaccination people at this conference. This is a map that shows the percentages of children that are missing, that are not up to date with the standard 43133 series, just looking at dose counting. And you can see that 30 states are shaded blue or green, and that means that they have less than 20% of their children who are not up to date. While only 21 states are shaded yellow or red, those are the states that have more than 20% of children not up to date. And only 2 states have more than 30% of children not up to date. But by comparison, this map shows the percentage of children who are not compliant with ACIP recommendations. And you can see now that only 2 states are shaded blue or green, with less than 20% not compliant, while the remaining 49 have more than 1 in 5 children not compliant. And 13 states are now in red, showing that more than 30% of their children are not compliant with ACIP recommendations. I know you're all trying to find your state and see how it compares. So we can see that dose counting is, you know, we know that it's a simple and a time-tested method of assessing vaccination coverage. And it accounts for about two-thirds of non-compliance with the ACIP recommendations. But it also disregards a substantial number of children who are not in compliance with the recommendations. I believe that the percent of children who are in compliance with recommendations is also an essential measure of the health quality of healthcare service delivery. And also that a comprehensive approach to measuring vaccination coverage, looking both at vaccine series and at individual vaccines, looking at dose counting and ACIP compliant coverage, looking at timeliness and coverage at various ages of the children, may help to determine the quality of healthcare, to evaluate programs, to reveal the strengths and weaknesses of those programs, and to elicit data-driven solutions so that we can help to ensure that children and communities are optimally protected against vaccine-preventable diseases. For more information, the manuscript from this is in press currently, and it'll be coming out in June in the AJPM, and I have copies of the presentation if you need any after. And note the tagline at the bottom that we have to put up. The findings are our own. Thank you.
Thanks for a very provocative presentation. We've certainly been grappling with that issue in terms of this, our system and reporting, and should we just look at dose counting? We choose to say at the patient level where the forecasting happens, we absolutely adhere to the ACIP recommendations, but for the purposes of reporting, we take a more broader approach and do the simple dose counting method. My question for you is, I guess this ultimately translates more into how does this impact outbreaks of disease, and does that difference that you're showing translate into more outbreaks of disease in those states where you've seen that they're actually not compliant? Because as we all know, that four-day grace period is pretty arbitrary, and so why not 5 days, why not 1 week? So does it really have an impact in terms of the control of disease?
That's a great question, and that always comes up, is so what does that mean for disease? And I think, a lot depends on how bad were the intervals or the ages, violated. So if a child, for some diseases, we know the answer really well. We know, for instance, for measles, that if a child receives their measles vaccine prior to 9 months, we know exactly what the proportion of children are that will then seroconvert and be protected against measles, and we know, pretty much exactly sort of where things stand. We don't know on the individual child level, but on the population level, we know how those seroconversions work. For a lot of vaccines, we don't know. And the reason that the recommendations were made the way they are is because the ACIP felt that these are the times that have been shown to be effective and safe. And so we try to stick with the recommendations as closely as possible. On a day-to-day basis, as a provider, you all have to decide. Sometimes you have to weigh the lesser of two evils. Do we give a dose that's a few days too early, or do we not give it and maybe the child doesn't come back ever and get that dose? And so you have to weigh that on an individual basis. But all else being equal, we like for people to try to adhere to the recommendations as closely as possible.